News of the Times. Serial Killer Saturdays. The Bolton Murderess. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1842, and young children in the vicinity of Betty Eccles have a habit of dying. Normally after a meal cooked by her, followed by 24 hours of violent vomiting. Of her original 10 children, she has 2 left. Despite the unexpected death of her first husband and a flurry of 3 deaths in 1 year as a widow, Betty marries a widower who has his own 2 children, and the 2 families merge. The husband works away Monday to Saturday every week, leaving Betty in charge of the household. It doesn't take long for one of her own remaining children to die, followed by the eldest son of her second husband. A child she cares for in lieu of payment to a local tradesman also dies. We look at this case from 1842 in Bolton of serial family deaths in today's episode of Serial Killer Saturdays. We hope you enjoy the show. Elizabeth Haslam, known as Betty, was a widow with children. Her husband had died relatively young, but no suspicion was entertained at the time that it had been anything other than a natural death. She claimed at one point to have had 10 children, but only 1 remained. In 1840, she had an unfortunate succession of deaths within her family, with the deaths of Hannah Haslam, 6 years, Anne Haslam, 4 years, and Richard Haslam, 16 months. Neighbours gossiped about the seeming curse on Betty, with whispers of suspicion, but no investigations took place. In January 1841, Betty, aged 38, married Henry Eccles, who had 3 children of his own. Due to some upset which is not detailed in reports, Mr. Eccles changes jobs and begins to work in Salford. Given the hefty commute, Mr. Eccles lives in Salford for the majority of the week, comes back for a day, and then commutes back. He is looking to eventually move his family there. Betty, alone in the house with children, is responsible for her own remaining child, as well as Eccles's 3 children. The household includes William Eccles, 14, Richard Eccles, 12, Mary Eccles, 9, and Alice Haslam, 10. William and Richard work locally and hand their wages to Betty, which she uses to run the household. In September 1842, her own daughter Alice dies suddenly. The death is sudden and involves much purging and extreme pain before she passes. Betty claims to have attempted to get a doctor, but it was too late. The sad event occurred whilst Mr. Eccles was away at work. In October 1842, William, her eldest stepson, becomes exceedingly ill and dies. Questions are asked at this second unusual death within the household in a short span of time. Investigations begin into the antecedents of Betty, where her numerous unfortunate deaths with her family are discovered. An inquest is held on the body of previously healthy William Eccles, and as the inquest reviews all the initial collected evidence, what initially seemed a straightforward inquest into the death of 14-year-old William develops into a full-scale inquiry into multiple deaths and a possible serial killer. From the Evening Star, the 4th of October, 1842, supposed murder of 10 persons by poison. A considerable degree of alarm and excitement was created in the neighbourhood of Foles, Little Bolton, on Thursday last, in consequence of an inquisition held at the Crown Inn upon the body of William Eccles, a boy of nearly 15 years of age, son of Henry Eccles, a carter, and who has hitherto borne an irreproachable character. The jury were at first summoned with an idea that it was an ordinary case of sudden death, but, from facts which afterwards transpired, the coroner deemed it necessary to have a post-mortem examination of the body, the result of which proved that there was a large quantity of arsenic in the bowels of the deceased. The evidence already given does not implicate any individual, but from inquiries made, there is every reason to suppose that the deceased's stepmother has been guilty of the murder. It appears that Betty, then a widow, was married about 2 years ago to Henry Eccles, a carter, of respectable character, who was then in the service of a Mr. Hardcastle of Firwood, but was discharged in consequence of some faux pas on the part of his wife, and has since been working at Manchester. The family remained at Little Bolton. Shortly before her second marriage, she buried two daughters, one about 7 and the other about 9 years of age, within a fortnight of each other, and from the circumstance of their having died suddenly, it now suspected that they fell victims to her extraordinary and unaccountable predilection for poisoning. Her first husband also died suddenly, but having been unwell for some time previously, there was no suspicion of foul play, although it is now hinted that he did not die from natural causes. In fact, it is suspected that all her family, excepting those alive, have received a helping hand. She has been the mother of 10 children, and 8 of them have died suddenly. And if we add the stepson and the first husband, she may be supposed to have poisoned 10 persons. On Monday morning last, her present husband left home to attend to his work, and remarked, "Now, Betty, look to the children while I'm away, and in a week or two we'll remove to Manchester." She replied, "I always do look after them," and the man went away contented. Indeed, there was no reason for complaint as to harsh treatment on her part, but, on the contrary, she was always very kind to them, as far as appearances went. The following are the short particulars relative to the death of William Eccles, who was not her own child, but that of her husband by his marriage with another woman. On Monday morning last, the deceased 14-year-old William Eccles went to his work at the usual hour, and continued in good spirits to work until dinner time. When he returned from dinner, he complained of a great pain in his stomach and of being sick, at the same time vomiting a greenish fluid. He left work about 3 o'clock in consequence of being ill, and one of his fellow workmen, on going home upwards of an hour afterwards, found him lying on his back in a ditch, vomiting to a great degree, and, on being questioned, he complained of great pain in his stomach and bowels. He said he had had a plum dumpling for dinner. His fellow workmen lifted him up and supported him toward home, and on their way they met the deceased's stepmother. Deceased's companion requested her to take him home and give him something warm, and she replied that she would, as she had already made some tea. This evidence having been given, Mr. Taylor, the coroner, said it was clear the jury upon it could not come to any satisfactory conclusion, and he should therefore suggest the propriety of adjourning the inquiry until the body should be opened and the contents of the stomach analysed. This suggestion, meeting with the concurrence of the jury, the inquest was adjourned until the following day. The inquest was led by Alfred Swain Taylor, one of the preeminent forensic scientists in the pre- and early Victorian times. Taylor's speciality was poisons, and he was regularly brought forward in murder trials as the medical expert. Taylor was known for his cleverness and wide breadth of knowledge, not one to let go of anything halfway. Once Taylor was involved, he was keen to ensure a full investigation. Taylor was reprimanded on more than one occasion for the great expenses incurred in his investigation, as he was a great believer in precise testing, usually done several times in order to ensure the accuracy of his results. From the Evening Star, the 4th of October, 1842. Supposed murder of 10 persons by poison. At the resumed inquest, the coroner said in opening the case that he had, in consequence of information which he had received, directed the body of another child to be examined, which, having been buried some time ago, had to be exhumed. This child was named Alice, and it was suspicious from what the mother had said that there had been something foul connected with her death. She, the mother, Betty Eccles, on being questioned, said that the deceased Alice had been attended by a doctor in her sickness, but she did not know his name or where he lived. Mr. Taylor said the testimony given by the medical gentlemen, Messrs. Denham and Howard, went to show that there was a large portion of arsenic in the stomachs of both bodies examined, and in that of the deceased, William Eccles, as much as would cover the face of a shilling. He, the coroner, would wish the inquest to be further adjourned till Tuesday, in order that the evidence might be completed. This was compiled with, and the inquiry will take place in the police office in order to give the opportunity of the public attending on Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. As the medical evidence comes in, more concerns of unexplained deaths arise, requiring further exhumations. A troubling additional death outside of the home comes to light in addition to the now suspected 10 deaths associated with Betty. The rag and bone man Haywood made a deal of exchange of services for the care of his son, for goods she had purchased from him. 3 weeks later the child was dead. He never was paid for the goods, but instead found his healthy young son dead. Another interesting aspect to the case is Betty's assertions that some of her dead children are not hers. She strongly claims she never had a child named Anne, although inquiries confirm that she did. Exhumation. Yesterday the bodies of 3 other children were exhumed. The one was named Hannah Haslam, aged 6, and buried on the 9th of October, 1840. The other, Anne Haslam, aged 4 years, buried the 3rd of December, 1840, and the other, Richard Haslam, aged 16 months, buried on March, 1840. The prisoner, Betty Eccles, for she is now in confinement, denies that she ever had a child named Anne. The prisoner in March last was nurse to a child of Mr. James Haywood of Bradshaw, which it is feared also met its death by poison. On the Saturday preceding the death of this child, the prisoner went to Mr. Haywood and requested him to let her have two flock beds, as she was desirous to take lodgers and wished to have this accommodation. Mr. Hayward told her to call on the following Monday, which she did, and she received the beds. And the condition was, payment was to be made for them out of what was given for nursing his child. On the following day, the child died, and prisoner has not yet paid for the beds, and the presumption is she put the child out of the way to avoid payment. The arsenic purchase. About 5 or 6 weeks ago, the prisoner purchased a pennyworth of arsenic at the shop of Mr. Moscrop, druggist, Foles Road, alleging that it was for the purpose of poisoning mice. Mr. Moscrop, with laudable caution, at first refused to let the prisoner have the poison and would not do so until she brought with her another person as witness. Prisoner left the shop and shortly returned with another woman, and Mr. Moscrop then supplied her with the arsenic, which he folded in two papers and wrote in legible characters on the cover, "Poison." A search has been made in the prisoner's house, but no arsenic has been found. Mr. Taylor has been exceedingly vigilant during the inquiries, and too much praise cannot be given to Mr. Inspector Harris for his exertions in finding out and furnishing information bearing upon the inquest. The bodies of the two children interred 2 years ago were exhumed yesterday, and the contents of their stomachs analysed by Mr. H. Watson, and we are informed that one of them was found to have been poisoned. The appearances in the other bespoke something of the kind, but no definite conclusion could be made upon the subject. We should suppose that there never was in this country such a wanton and cold-blooded number of murders without cause. She was not in distress, had not quarrelled with them, and, what is more, could not have done it for the sake of money, as they did not belong to any burial society. Throughout the proceedings, Betty maintains an obstinate sullenness, often arguing points that can be clearly proven. She denies ever having a child named Anne, although this is easily proven. She denies having purchased arsenic from the chemist, although this can be confirmed by another in the shop. The inquest continues, taking on the form of a trial, as witness after witness is brought forward to either confirm the health before and after of one of the dead, or to confirm the results of extensive testing on the exhumed bodies. Although Dr. Taylor was a preeminent pathologist of the day, some of the corpses exhumed were so decomposed they were little more than sludge, making accurate testing nearly impossible. As the inquest progresses, the packed proceedings await the testimony of her husband, Henry Eccles. From the Bolton Chronicle, the 8th of October, 1842, the adjourned inquest of the children poisoned, verdict of willful murder in three cases. The adjournment inquest was held on Tuesday morning last at the police office in Bokers Row. The time announced for opening the investigation was 9 o'clock, but before that hour, such was the interest excited that the court was crowded to excess and a large number were unable to gain attendance. The prisoner affected an air of indifference and, during the examination that took place, did not appear to feel the least concern about it. The following evidence was given. Henry Eccles deposed, "I live at Turner Bridge, Little Bolton, and am a carter. I have lived there about 8 months. I first became acquainted with the prisoner in the latter part of the year 1840. Her name then was Betty Haslam, and she lived in Bradshaw Gate and was a widow and had three children, all daughters. The eldest was called Alice, another Hannah, but I do not know the name of the third. She remained a few weeks in Bradshaw Gate after I first became acquainted with her, and then removed into Mill Street in Little Bolton. The children she had at that time appeared very healthy. I had a dispute with her after having removed to the cellar in Mill Street, and did not go near her for a month. When I did go again, two of the youngest children were dead and buried. She told me the youngest died of measles, but did not say what the other had died of. I was informed that the oldest died first. I was married to her the first Sunday in 1841, but I do not recollect how long it was previously that the children died. When we were married, I took her to reside at the Bugget Hole in Tong. I was then working for Mr. James Hardcastle. I remained there until a little before Christmas, when I removed to the Folds in Little Bolton, and, shortly afterwards, to another house at Turner Bridge in the same neighbourhood. I left Mr. Hardcastle's employ some 9 weeks ago, and am now in the service of John and James Worrell, dyers in Salford. Since I went there, I have been in the habit of going the Monday morning, leaving my wife in charge of the family, and returning on the Saturday night. Shortly after going to reside at Turner Bridge, I remember my wife taking a child to nurse belonging to James Haywood of Bradshaw Gate. It was then about 10 months old. In the month of June last, I remember leaving the child well and returned home about 4 o'clock on the following morning, and the child was dead. She did not tell me what it had died from. I remember Sunday the 4th of September, and that was the last day I saw my wife's daughter alive. She was then well and hearty. The last time I saw her was going to bed almost at 8 o'clock at night. I came home again the Saturday following, and Alice was then dead. My wife said that Alice was taken ill on the Tuesday night and began to have fits, and died at 12:30 the Saturday at noon. She was buried on the Tuesday following. The last time I saw my son, William Eccles, alive was on the evening of last Sunday but one. I saw him go to bed, and he was then quite well and healthy. I went to my work on the Monday, and afterwards learnt that he was dead. I came home last Friday morning and found that it was so. From here, witness after witness within the neighbourhood, as well as the children themselves, are asked to depose. Many of the testimonies overlap, confirming that they had witnessed the children healthy and that the children died with much pain and vomiting within 24 hours of first becoming ill, suspiciously shortly after having eaten food prepared by Betty. One of the witnesses from Betty's earlier residence before she was married testifies to the beatings she would give her children. Mart Fletcher deposed, in the latter part of the year 1840, I remember the prisoner, whose name was Betty Haslam, coming to reside in our neighbourhood. She had then three daughters, Hannah, the youngest, Mary, the next, and Alice, the eldest. I recollect the youngest being dead and saw the funeral. Sometime after that, I saw another funeral. I had seen Hannah playing in the street the day before she died. On the Sunday after the funeral of Hannah, I went to the cellar window where the prisoner lived, on account of my attention being called by the beating of a child. She had given over beating the child then, and the prisoner was in bed, and the daughter Alice lay stripped upon the hearth, crying. I asked her how she could for shame to be beating it in that way, and had so lately buried the other. She replied that she would do as she liked with her children. She removed in 2 or 3 weeks after that. Another repeated point from the many witnesses brought forward relayed the horrendous state of the dead bodies, specifically around the abdomen, as the children were washed, dressed, and laid out for their burial. In some cases, stating that the area was green in colour, whilst with other children, the area of the child's corpse is referring to as being black. Margaret Bennison deposed, I am a widow and live in Great Bolton. In March last, I was applied to by James Haywood to furnish a funeral suit for a child. I made the suit and put it upon the child on the march, the day of which it was interred. The child was dirty about the mouth with what had come from the inside. I do not suppose the child had been very well cared for. It appeared to be a very lost child. The stomach was green, as if about to decay, and the lower down on the body was of a darker colour. I'd seen children in that way that have died from convulsions. I was present in the parish church on the Friday last when the dead body of James Haywood's child was exhibited to view. I knew it to be the body of his child. With establishment of the previous good health of the now dead children from several witnesses from Betty's previous and current residences, the next step is to prove her purchase of poison. Richard Barlow deposed, I reside in Little Bolton and am an apprentice to Mr. Thomas Moscrop, druggist in Foles Road, Little Bolton. I have known the prisoner for 5 or 6 months. She has occasionally bought snuff and tea at the shop. She came to the shop about 5 or 6 weeks ago. I and her master and her were the only persons in the shop when she came. She said, I want a penny's worth of arsenic if you'll let me have it. Mr. Moscrop said, I cannot let you have it unless there is someone with you. It is the custom not to sell it without a witness. She said, I do not want to do any hurt with it. It is only for the mice. Mr. Moscrop, however, refused to let her have it, and she went away. In about half an hour afterwards, she came back and brought a female with her, but I do not know who the woman was. The prisoner, on coming in again, said, Will you let me have it now? An ounce of arsenic was then weighed to her. It was first wrapped in white paper, on which was his address, and labelled poison. A second paper was then wrapped around it, and another label like this put upon it. The label was of dark and solemn character, with the death's head and the words arsenic, poison upon it. She then went away. I'm sure she is the same person. I have no doubt at all that she is the same woman. Medical testimony is produced confirming the testing done on the bodies, with the results being tested positive for arsenic by 3 different specialists. There is no question of the relatively large amount of arsenic found in the bodies. The last witness in the inquest trial is the Inspector of Police, James Harris. James Harris, Inspector of Police, deposed, On the 28th of September, I went to the house of Henry Eccles and searched it. I found several things which I gave to Mr. Watson. On Thursday morning, the 29th, I took Betty Eccles into custody. I cautioned her, when I apprehended her, not to say anything which might convict her. I told her she was charged with having caused the death of 3 children with poison. I first asked her how long William Eccles had been sick. She stated that he ate his dinner heartily on Monday and then went to his work, and that he returned in the afternoon between 3 and 4 o'clock in a weakly state, and that she met him coming home and he was then throwing up. I asked her if she had had any doctor, and she said she had called upon Dr. Mallett, but that he was not at home. She then said she gave William some senna and salts, but that he died in about 6 hours. I asked her how long Alice had been sick and what she had ailed from, and she said she was ill for 3 days and died at 12 o'clock at noon on the Saturday. I asked her about having a doctor to her, and she said she called once or twice upon Dr. Mallett and left word, but that Mr. Mallett did not come until Saturday, and the child had just died. I asked her if she ever had poison in the house for killing mice or any other vermin, and she said, to her knowledge, she never had a bit of poison in her life. I then mentioned Mr. Moscrop to her and asked her if she had ever bought any arsenic from him, and she said she had not. That she had frequently bought snuff there and, a short time ago, some poppies and laudanum mixture for a cough. On the following day, I showed Mr. Moscrop to her, and he said he had a faint recollection of her buying some, but that he would fetch his apprentice, and she stated distinctly to Mr. Moscrop that she never did buy any poison from him. The apprentice was brought immediately after and identified her. I asked her how long she was a widow, but she did not state the number of months. I asked her how many children she had when a widow, and she gave me their names and ages. Hannah, 2 years of age, Richard, 16 months, and Alice. She denied ever having a child of the name of Nancy or of the name of Anne. She informed me that she was the mother of 10 children. Although arsenic poisoning is suspected in the following cases of William Eccles, Alice Haslam, Nancy Haslam, Hannah Haslam, Richard Haslam, Anne Haslam, William Hatton Haywood, her first husband, and 3 other children who had also died, the jury is directed to focus their attention only on the case of William Eccles, Alice Haslam, and Nancy Haslam. The other bodies exhumed had been in a far too extended state of putrefaction to be reliably tested. The prisoner was then requested to stand up, and the coroner said she was at liberty to state anything she thought proper, but that he would advise her not to say anything. She replied with an air of indifference, "I'll not say anything. I leave it to the court." The coroner then proceeded to sum up, stating that the consideration of the jury must be directed to the cases of William Eccles, Alice Haslam, and Nancy Haslam, and they must dismiss the others entirely from their minds. The jury consulted together for about 10 minutes and then reported that they had agreed upon their verdict. They then consulted upon the other cases and immediately returned a verdict of willful murder in each of the 3 cases named by the coroner. In the case of Haywood's child and the other girl, a verdict of sudden death. By what means they came to their death, there was no evidence to show was returned. The coroner then informed the prisoner that she stood committed for trial at the next Liverpool Assizes and addressed her in very feeling terms, recommending her, whilst in prison, to pursue a different course of life to that she had hitherto done, and supposing even that she was innocent, which God and her own conscience alone knew, it would do her no harm but good. And if she were guilty, she would have every reason to make preparation for another and better world. At the conclusion, she turned round in a most impudent manner and said, "Thank you, gentlemen, for your kindness." The persons in court, on hearing this, gave one loud and almost general hoot. She was placed in a chaise and conveyed to the railway office, followed by a large crowd of persons who seemed disposed, could they have been permitted, to have dealt with her according to Lynch law. Betty's trial is packed with spectators. The evidence from the inquest is brought forward again, with further detail added. One of the most intriguing aspects of the whole trial was what could possibly have been her motive. Three possibilities arise. One is that young William, now deceased, had caught Betty indulging in drink and had stated he would tell his father. He never had the opportunity. The second possible motive that transpires is the inclusion in the factory insurance program. Both William and Richard worked there, and it would seem that she joined William to the burial club as well. But the payout was so minor as to be less than the wages that William brought in. The last possible motive that was put forward was that she had killed the Haywood child she nursed in order to not have to pay the debt she owed to his father. All in all, very small sums of money that were difficult to outweigh with the deaths of the children. She gained very little monetarily from their deaths. One dramatic scene from the trial was when 9-year-old Mary gave evidence of Betty's unwillingness to visit the gravesite of the recently passed children, and Betty allegedly declined, stating she had other things on her mind. Betty jumped onto her feet in court and shouted, "You willful liar!" From the Atlas on the 8th of April, 1843, a woman convicted of murder. At the Assizes at Liverpool on Tuesday, Betty Eccles was indicted for the willful murder of William Eccles at Bolton by administering to him arsenic. Mr. Armstrong stated the case. The deceased, it appeared, was a lad of about 14 years of age, in the employment of Messrs. Eden and Thwaites at Bolton. The prisoner was his stepmother, and the family consisted of the prisoner, the deceased, his brother, Richard and Mary Eccles, the two latter also stepchildren. The husband, Henry Eccles, was employed at Manchester, spending only the Sunday with his family. Several witnesses were examined, but the most material evidence was the following. Some time before the prisoner was drunk, and the deceased said, "He would tell his father," she replied, "If thou dost, I'll soon be shut of thee." She beat him sometimes. The house was not infested by rats or mice. He had never heard the prisoner complain of them. Alice Haslam died a fortnight before the deceased. John Turner, bookkeeper at the works of Messrs. Eden and Thwaites, said that the workpeople have a burial club amongst them for the people employed there. The deceased was a member of it. And about the 10th of September, the prisoner, Betty Eccles, called on the witness and asked for her burial money for her daughter by a former husband, Alice Haslam, who had just died. It was then explained to her that she was not entitled to such burial money as her husband was not employed in the works. And the deceased, Alice, was not in the employment of Messrs. Eden and Thwaites. She came again on Tuesday the 27th of September for the burial money of William Eccles. Its amount was 50 shillings. The witness desired her to call again the next day, as he wished to make some inquiry about the matter, having seen the deceased apparently quite well the day before, and being struck by the fact of the second application for burial money coming so soon after the first. The prisoner was taken into custody in the afternoon of Thursday the 29th. Mr. Watson stated that he analysed the contents of the stomach. The white powder adhering to the coats was oxide of arsenic. The defence stressed that any doubt as to his client's guilt required a not guilty verdict. The verdict. From the Bolton Chronicle on the 8th of April 1843. Trial of Betty Eccles for the willful murder of her children at Bolton. The learned judge summed up the evidence. The jury then retired and, after a nascence of an hour and a half, returned into court and pronounced the prisoner guilty. Silence having been proclaimed, his lordship put on the black cap and passed the awful sentence of death upon the prisoner. He stated, "The sentence upon you is that for the crime which you have committed and of which you have been found guilty, you be taken hence to the place of execution, that you then be hanged by your neck until you are dead, and that your body be taken down and buried within the precincts of the jail on which you have been confined to after being taken from this court. And may the Lord have mercy upon your guilty soul." The prisoner heard her sentence with firmness, and at its conclusion she clasped her hands and exclaimed, "I ask for mercy, my lord." The judge responded, "Oh, that cannot be obtained." The prisoner stated, "Oh, mercy, my lord, if only you will have mercy upon me this time, my lord." The judge responded, "Take her down." The prisoner was then removed. The execution. Public executions were still in place in 1843, and they tended to be an event. In this case, Betty was to be executed with another criminal, Wilmot Buckley. It was said that the public execution drew between 20,000 and 30,000 attendees. From the Liverpool Chronicle, the 11th of May, 1843. The execution of Betty Eccles and Wilmot Buckley at Kirkdale. The execution of these unfortunate criminals who were convicted at the last assizes took place on Saturday at the north-west angle of Kirkdale Jail. The time fixed was 12, long before which the approaches to the scene of death were thronged with a gaping multitude. The female convict was tried for the murder of her stepson, a boy about 14 years of age, at Bolton, whom she had poisoned for the purpose of getting a trifling sum of money out of a burial club, and, from the disclosures on the trial, it was too clear that she had also poisoned two children of her own by her former husband. Buckley's offence belonged to a milder category, and the jury seemed strongly inclined to reduce it to the worst species of manslaughter. Even after they found him guilty of murder, they recommended him to the merciful consideration of the Crown. He cut his wife's throat in a field near St. Helens while they were taking a walk on a Sunday evening, she being at the time pregnant. But from his own confession after the act and other corroborative circumstances, it was evidently the impulse of a frantic moment, done in the heat of passion and produced by the tantalizing upbraiding of his wife, who was jealous of her husband and viewed his attention to other females with distrust. At the execution, the Reverend Mr. Appleton read the burial service, and at the termination of which Buckley was led to the scaffold, where the rope was placed around his neck. During the process, the female prisoner remained in the chair, her eyes fixed intently on the awful preparations which the other criminal was undergoing. This completed, the executioner led her forward, and she rose without any seeming agitation and walked on, her lips moving in prayer. Mr. Appleton attended to the scaffold, still reading the service for the dead. At the close, the fatal bolt was withdrawn, and the prisoners, in a few seconds, ceased to exist. Buckley made a hearty breakfast, but the other wretched sufferer was unable to eat. Betty Eccles acknowledged that she had poisoned her stepson, but would not say, though she hardly denied, that she had disposed of the other two children in the same manner. The roads to and from the execution were densely crowded, and, from the number of persons in vehicles of every description, it resembled a visit to the racecourse on some attractive occasion. The number present we have heard variously estimated at between 20,000 and 30,000 persons. That concludes this episode of Serial Killer Saturdays, The Bolton Murderess. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy the show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our little channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. And Sundays is a bit of fun with the unique mini murder mystery where you, the listener, have a chance to solve a murderous riddle. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.